data once it's been created, I suppose. And so this topic is going to be dealing precisely with that, with metadata. And Mary's going to kind of, Mary, Teresa, and Elena are going to give us a brief overview and then lead that discussion. That's kind of over to Mary.
Okay. So just again, the perspective I'm coming from is as a librarian. I head up the technical services unit, and we basically describe things that are in our collection. So anything from a map, a drawing, a journal article, archival materials, and so on. So we use a lot of different metadata standards. So I'm going to just sort of talk through what those are and sort of what some of the considerations for this type of corpus and how it might want to be described, and then some of the things that we can hopefully start discussing. So the goal of metadata encoding is to support not only retrieval and analysis, but also functions like discovery and display, navigation, management of a resource, preservation of the resource, and also to enable interoperability with other collections of resources and other resources that are similar. So the decisions that we make is really should be based a lot on the use case for the content that we're creating in this project, and you know what the text and the products of that project are going to be. So the world of metadata standards is quite vast. This is really just within the kind of the cultural heritage domain. So it's a little overwhelming. And there's a lot of repetition up here, so don't think these are all individual. But this is a really interesting diagram that was done by Jen Riley, who is, I think, Associate Dean at McGill University. So that she's done a lot of work in standards, and she's written like the standards book from NISO, and so she's quite knowledgeable. But this is a little bit older, so there's some standards that aren't up there, new standards that aren't up there. So basically, you can look across multiple domains of the types of materials, you know, cultural objects, data sets, geospatial data, moving images, etc. And then the different communities that might be describing things in those domains, right? So there's libraries, archives, museums, information industry. There's also metadata schema have different functions. They might be a schema for content standards or conceptual models, markup languages, and so on. And then their purpose. Each metadata standard has a particular purpose beyond its function, which is to either describe a resource, create a wrapper around a digital resource or a record resource, rights metadata, so what are the copyright and other rights associated with the object, structural metadata, etc. I was going to focus in kind of at this, I'm doing it on my computer. Okay. So anyway, so I just zoomed in here on the domain of scholarly texts, because that's obviously a big area for libraries, is to work in the area of scholarly texts. And a lot of scholarly editing projects are in partnership with libraries. So you see, you know, there's a lot of different types of metadata structures. Are you guys all, anybody, are people familiar with some of these acronyms? I will not explain them all. But there are quite a lot of them. Dublin Core is a descriptive standard, markup standard, and et cetera. Library of Congress subject headings, LCSH, are a set of vocabularies that you can apply to records that you're describing an object with. And then, you know, rights information. MODS is a descriptive metadata standard. DAX is describing archives of content standard, is actually a set of rules for describing archival materials. So there are plenty of standards, metadata standards, to consider. and we must, as they say, choose wisely. Mm-hmm. But really, it's important to know what we're going to be doing with the resources and who they're going to be shared with, who's going to be accessing, how we want them discovered, how we want them preserved, do we want them aggregated, to really understand what standards are going to be kind of key, important, or ones that are going to align with maybe broader standards for aggregation. So I promise not to talk about these because it gets into a lot of stuff that we don't want to get into. Oops, I just lost my slide. Okay, so there are different types of metadata. This is, again, a very, very basic chart that comes from, again, Jen Riley from Understanding Metadata. What is metadata? What's it for? So there are basic types of metadata. And again, this is kind of coming from a library cultural heritage perspective. So descriptive metadata, it is really about finding and understanding a resource. So what is that resource about? Who wrote it? When was it published? Who published it, et cetera? There's administrative metadata, and this comes in a couple of different subcategories. Administrative metadata can tell you the technical metadata about how a file was created, what file format it's in, how many files there are, so on. Preservation metadata will give information to a repository. Say you want to share this digital thing you've created with a digital preservation repository. So there you provide them a certain level of preservation metadata about the bitstream and checksums and other kinds of information so that they can take that thing and understand it and then preserve it over the long term. And then again, rights metadata. Rights metadata can include who owns it, but also who holds the rights to it. Is it in the public domain? Is it under copyright? And so on. Structural metadata is metadata about how parts are related to each other. So you think of a journal. A journal has issues. Issues have pages. Pages have articles that might span multiple pages. And when you're going through a resource, as you're navigating it online through some display mechanism, you need that navigational metadata so that you know when you hit next, what's the next page you go to, or if you want the next article, you have to have that metadata encoded in that document or as part of the metadata around that document to help you navigate through it. And then there's markup languages. All of these can be XML schemas. So any descriptive, administrative, structural metadata can be encoded. And there are other markup schemas and markup languages that can be used as part of metadata. I'll show you sort of an example. Okay. So the metadata uses. Keep forgetting to change your slide. There we go. Okay, so metadata uses. So each type of metadata has specific properties that can be part of their type. So a descriptive metadata can have a property, title, author, subject, genre, publication date. And the primary use of that is obviously so that you can discover the item, you can display the item, and that it interoperates with other items that have that same descriptive metadata. The technical metadata will, again, carry file type, size, file size, creation date, time, compression scheme, other sorts of metadata. And again, that allows things to interoperate. It helps with digital object management, preservation. Again, preservation has checksum information, preservation events, but it can have, these are just sort of samples of what they might include. So rights metadata will have license term, rights holder, copyright status. And again, helps us manage that object and have it interoperate. So it's like if you want to see all digital objects that have are in the public domain, you should be able to use that as part of your search to discover those objects. And then again, structural metadata is for sequence and hierarchy. It allows you to navigate. And then the markup languages. And I think in this instance, what she's really focusing on is TEI, the Text Encoding Initiative type markup. Text Encoding Initiative, is anyone familiar with TEI? Okay, so most scholarly editing projects for the last 20 years have been using TEI to encode scholarly texts. And it really gets into the document and tagging entities, tagging, annotating. It's the schema that is used most for scholarly projects like this. It's pretty heavyweight, but it helps you to define a lot of the parts of a text, but also a lot of the scholarly information you might want to encode in the text and some of the things you would get from the natural language processing. Okay. All right, so I want to show you what a descriptive metadata sort of a stack might look like. From the reading, we were Chris, I think it was Chris, that did the data modeling one. the bigger one I did not like, but again, this is sort of, you know, alphabet soup. But basically, most of these metadata kind of stacks begin with a conceptual model of the data, like how are these entities connected to one another in, you know, an entity relationship. So we have CDOC CRM, which is a museum. It's the Committee International Documentation, and it's a conceptual reference model. This one's been around probably the longest, said it's so the most implemented. The library had a FERBR, which is functional reference for bibliographic resources. I think reference model for bibliographic resources. FERBR, as of like January, is being replaced by a new one called LRM, which is library reference model, which is it's more specific to the semantic web, because FERBR was very early. This is, it's more semantically aligned, shall we say. And then the archives, you know, not wanting to be outdone, had to do their own, which was called EGAD. And that really hasn't gone anywhere. probably because of the name. Anyway, so these models tell you how does information relate to one another, how do these entities relate to one another through various attributes. You know, a work has an instance, or has a manifestation, or has an expression, it has an author, or you know, a title and all that. So there are specific data structures and content and values that have been developed by, again, these three communities, these three domains, that were specific to the type of materials they're describing. So in the museums, they created CDWA, Categories for the Description of Works of Art, which is a kind of a structure for a database. So it's a little outdated as a, you know, as a semantically aware standard. But it has been converted to some XML schemas, which is CDWA-like, but then also sort of more CDOC CRM'd into things called Lido. So the data structure is sort of what are the elements, what are the data points we want to capture about a resource. The data content and values are, the contents are rules, like CCO is Cataloging Cultural Objects, it's a rule set. AACR2 has been, which is Anglo-American Cataloging Rules, has been replaced by Resource Description and Access, which again, moving from a traditional rule book to something that's more semantically aware, a linked data aware set of rules. So you can see that we're sort of moving away from maybe database structures, but we're still using a lot of the rule books, but we're trying to make everything a little bit more semantically aware so that we can be, instead of creating these static records in library catalogs, we are actually exposing linked data. So these schemas are still in use. Again, Lido is more typical for museums. The libraries have MarkXML. Mark was the machine-readable cataloging that was developed in the 1960s to share records between libraries. There's a plain language version of it that's called the Metadata Object Description Schema, MODS. And then BibFrame is the kind of the FERBR logical model, right? So FERBR's the conceptual model for how the data relates to one another. BibFrame is the logical model, which is more specific to what's, you know, what's in a bibliographic resource and what we would collect in a bibliographic resource. And then it's being shared and expressed as REF, so that it can be expressed as something that is used on the web, so semantically aware. There are different ways that people can share the data that they've encoded in the schema, is by transforming it into an exchange format, right? So an RDF triple, or OAI through OAI, or what's called JSON LD. JSON is an encoded transfer mechanism, I guess is the best way to say it. So again, there's a lot of things going on here. This is just for descriptive metadata. So you can imagine if we started putting in rights metadata, preservation metadata, navigational metadata, it gets very complex because there's going to be a stack at some level for all of those things. So this is really just a stack for descriptive metadata in three different fields. CDOC CRM as a conceptual reference model might be one that would be interesting to look at for us because it is widely adopted. It is, however, quite complex and might be too heavyweight for what you know we might want to be able to achieve here. The LRM is interesting, but it's not far enough along. It doesn't have an expression as RDF, so it can't actually be shared yet. anyway, there's a lot that can happen around, this is just around the resource, right? So describing the resource. So we just need to think about what are the appropriate standards to share. So another consideration, when we think about the models that are out there, and this was in the reading, and it's kind of an interesting point. So there are curatorial-driven models, and these are, I would think, what a library would do, right? As curators of a resource, we need information to describe that resource, to administer that resource, and to navigate that resource. So we have to provide those levels of metadata. So they, you know, they provide access, discovery, and management and preservation of a resource. None of that information is terribly interesting to a scholar, right? A scholar, it gets you there. It gets you to the resource, but it's not going to help you know anything about that resource other than kind of the basics. So they're research-driven models, which are really about content markup. So while we are looking at one for descriptive metadata only, there are other standards just for marking up a document, and TEI is one of those. And so the focus of those markup standards is on the data that's relevant to research needs. You know, so you know, tagging and annotating a text. But the two have two different purposes, two different use cases. But they're aligned in a way because it's getting a scholar to a thing, and if you're creating that thing, you want to get other people to it, you're going to have that curatorial. And if you want to have it preserved, you're going to have to use that curatorial metadata to enable that data to live on past the project. Often what's happening with a lot of scholarly projects is, you know, someone does a project, their grant funds run out, and they sort of go, here, take this library and preserve this for me. And it's not possible because there's no documentation often about what was done, how it was done, who did it, when they did it. And actually there's a research project right now, Katrina Fenlon. No, she was at CNI. Were you at CNI? No, okay. She's creating a conceptual model for how to preserve scholarly products, or projects and their products. And so there's going to be a new model emerging about how to preserve scholarly digital humanities type projects.
Just what we needed.
Yeah, another one. I know. This is the trick. Okay, so do I have another slide? Okay, so this is what we're starting with in this project. We have the digitized microfilm, and then as Chris had pointed out, we've got this lightly encoded, clean OCR text. As you can see up at the top, it tells you what page number it is, tells you the article, the beginning and end of an article. I think that's almost it, right?
Yeah, and location of images.
So that's very basic markup, and the question would be, how much deeper do we want to go in terms of marking up the text? Now, this is below all that description and all that navigation and administrative metadata that we want to have about the journal and the articles in that journal. And then the question is, like, how much do we want to, from that, what the research-driven model, do we want to encode the text?
Don't we have titles tagged?
Could be. Yeah, there might be some other tags. This is just a snapshot of one of the pages.
Sorry.
It's very interesting to see, you know, see capital V at the bottom there on the left board, the illustration of the V.
Did it come out?
Nope.
Yeah, that's another thing, yeah, that happens. Because so there are more illustrations.
Exactly.
Yeah, the capital letters.
But that shows how important the illustrations are.
Yeah. you know, the journal has already existing metadata for the journal itself, right? Because it's been cataloged by librarians, so we have metadata records for the journal itself. So we could reuse that metadata. These are two versions of the same record. So this is the Journal de Voyage record from what's called OCLC, or WorldCat, which is a large union catalog of library holdings. So you can see it's a fairly detailed record, right, for the journal. It's been expressed in a markup in an art, like a schema, well, schema.org, where you can see this triples. Library has place of publication, and it'll say countries, I should say France, but Paris. You can see it's about adventure and adventurers. It's about voyages and travel, and so on. And it has dates and genre and all that, and that's all tagged in a schema output. So it's very easy to take a standard library record and transform it into any other standard. And so my point in thinking about what we want to do with the metadata is try to stick with the big ones, right? Stick with the ones that are well known. Because it's more likely there's a mapping or a transformation that's already been written to any other standard. And as new standards emerge, if you're with you know, the bulk of the community using one standard, it's more likely there's going to be a pathway to the new one. That's going to be easy. okay, and then... So next I wanted to talk a little bit about the encoding. So that was this was about, again, the... curatorial models that we might want to look at. This one's about the research models within the text itself. And so TEI, again, is very widely adopted within the scholarly community for scholarly editing projects. Mark Twain Papers, which is a project at Bancroft, has been encoding in TEI since 1990-ish, 1993. The Walt Whitman Papers, a lot of projects are using TEI. Whether TEI is the right fit, or the full TEI tag set is the right fit, is the question here. And so a lot of people are doing what's called TEI Lite, or customization of TEI Lite. So it gives you a very constrained, the TEI codebook is like this big. And so there's hundreds, thousands maybe TEI tags that you use, and you may not want to use them all. So you can constrain a version of TEI Lite using ODD, or One Document Does It All. So it creates an TEI XML conformant schema for you from the master set. It'll bring it down to, I only want to use these tags within my schema. And it'll constrain it. And there's a tool called Roma that will actually help you write that schema. So you can write your own customization of TEI and really pare it down. And I would suggest that might be the best way to go in terms of tagging, if you want to further tag within that document, whatever you gain from the analysis. All right. And then, so these are the questions, since I'm probably well over my 10 minutes at this point, that Chris wanted me to think about, like, what are the metadata needs for realizing this analysis? So how do we create, and I change it, or select a metadata schema for the corpus, and what level of granularity is necessary for retrieval and analysis? What metadata elements are essential for NLP, and I would hope the NLP people will have some thoughts on this, and then how do we handle images contained in the corpus? They're already tagged, it's probably easy to extract them, mark them up, and provide information about the files. That's fairly easy. And then how do we balance the metadata needs with time allowances? And again, trying to think, like, what's the minimal amount of information you might need. So instead of doing something like a MARC record, maybe we do a Dublin Core record for each issue or each article, depending on what you want to do. So those are some of the questions, and that's one of the nicer images.
I was just going to comment that's
that's not
quite
yours. Because I was so curious to see how many other images I could find that were better quality.
Yeah, that's a highly
brilliant example. Right?
Yeah.
Wait, look at the clothing. Look at the weapons. Look at the.
Well, you know what I love?
Everything.
He's charming the snake. He's about to shoot it, and these guys are saying, "Stop! He's got this." Is what I'm reading that image as. So I was curious what other people thought. but we won't go down that rabbit hole right now. So I just wanted to sort of leave it there. I know this was a very kind of quick spin through metadata standards. I just kind of to show you that there are a lot of pre-existing standards out there that we can make use of and not recreate the wheel. And there are a lot of things that could be plugged into different projects that are doing the same sort of thing. That could be a model for how you're going to go about this. But I think we need to think about things in two levels. One is the structured data, which is the metadata that talks about the resource. And then there's the unstructured data, which is the text itself, and how we're going to tag that within that document. And there are a lot of different tag libraries that are out there now. There's things like the journal, something tag suite. Journal archiving tag suite. There's all sorts of standards out there. And again, we don't want to create a new one, so we just want to figure out what are the right ones to use for the use cases.
Okay.
I think the structured data is going to be really important just because you point out that the Gallica PDFs are such low quality that we have, but that if we go back and get the originals, if we build it in such a way as we know the relationships between this encoded text and these pages from these particular journals, if we can somehow build that relationship, then we can refresh, update, you know, keep that side of the assets alive without having to do it purely as kind of manual labor.
Yeah, there's an interesting, you know, you can call out in some of the models, you can call out the images separately and you can give them their own, you know, information. You can describe them separately within the text and as a pointer to the text, to within the text.
Or if we're doing something like we mentioned in the first session of trying to find those same images and if we see one in another kind of publication, some way of building that relationship as well.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, same as relationships.
How do you handle these questions in your projects?
In mine? So I was gonna jump in here too and actually play a little bit of devil's advocate. When I was at Perseus, all the text recoded went to EI. Right? So all the markup was in the same document as the text that was in that document. For a lot of the annotation projects that I do now, we tend to use standoff annotation instead of structured metadata. So in this case, it would be to say that this location, so first of all, we take all the text in an article and then tokenize it so we know where the word boundaries are, and then say that this location exists in the document from tokens 13 through token 17. So that can exist as a separate file from the main document once you know what those boundaries are. So if you don't want to tokenize, you can do this at the byte level too and say that this annotation starts at byte 75 and goes through byte 85. I've always struggled with what the value is of encoding all that information in the context of one document. Like, why is it important to include this as XML tags around the text? Because I always find when in using these kind of XML annotated text for students that the biggest burden that they have is just how you process an XML document. But it ends up being a lot harder than you think.
Because the first thing you want to do is, like, how do I get rid of all of it?
Exactly, right.
Yeah. Which is why that's why you're going to have multiple products, right? You may have one that's encoded in XML. You may have one that's just straight text.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a question of, like, what is the use case? Do we think people are doing an analysis of you know, the, like a critical analysis, right? And there's a, you know, the